Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about episode 2 in the Wikipedia reading of United Arab Emirates. So there's like little teeth in the jaws of Arabia, sort of going up into Iran. There's the Persian Gulf, and moving along, the back teeth is Bahrain, then Qatar, an amazing country, which is the highest point, it's 104 metres, mostly distance, 160 kilometres long, capital Doha, huge gas reserve, Qatar, at the Tahini family, I can't quite remember, then you've got the, in the actual peninsula itself, that's United Arab Emirates, bordering, sea border with Iran and Kuwait, and then Saudi Arabia and Oman. Now, Oman's got its own breed of Islam. Well, I'll have to really go back into it. So, essentially, the British got pissed off with these little people, suppressed them, but what they were really wanting to do is have a method of holding their own troops down. Now, I'm just trying to work this out. I think one of the things is that if you are in a landlocked state, you can fight your army, set your defences up, but if you've got a large seaboard, like any of these things that are going into the sea, you're pretty much open to any big navy which comes along, so you really basically can't develop your own culture. You've got to barter your way up, and so they had the truce states. Now, just getting at the Doha in Qatar, and then the Arab Emirates, Britain said, too hard, 1971, look after yourself. Essentially, Britain wasn't getting much out of it. I don't quite understand. I think Britain had its oil companies in there to make money. But they didn't need to have their army there. So it's hard to understand how it goes like this. You have the Ottomans here. Okay, now we're going into the second chapter called A British Era and the Discovery of Oil. And just to put you in context, this is all part of rehab for me to be able to speak clearly and produce things on tape, or not tape, on a digital recorder. During the 19th and early 20th century, the pearling industry thrived. Oh, yes, that's right. The Japanese are going to introduce cultured pearls. That's where you get the oyster, open it up a bit, and put in a bit of sand. And essentially, sand, it's an immune response to coat a object with a this secretion, layer upon layer. So as it goes, layer gets, each layer scatters light, so it has a steepness, but it can be a circular thing. You start off with a small thing, it starts off with a circular thing, cultured pearls. And cultured pearls just basically meant that you had a far higher yield. So all your oysters, you didn't have to go up through 100 oysters, and one of them eat 100 of them, and then one of them has a pearl in it. This way you have, everyone has a pearl in it, and it goes through. So they have it in Australia. So we've got big culture farms here. So the Japanese pearling industry wasn't too good. Okay. Yes, it says here, the First World War had a severe impact on the industry, but it was the economic suppression of the state in the 20s and 30s, coupled with the invention of cultured pearls that wiped out the trade. The remnants of the train eventually faded away shortly after the Second War, when a newly independent government of India imposed heavy taxation on pearls imported from the Arab states and the Persian Gulf. The decline of pearling resulted in extreme economic hardship for the crucial states. In 1922, the government secured undertakings from the rules of the crucial states not to sign concessions with foreign companies without their consent. Aware of the potential for the development of natural resources such as oil, following finds in Persia from 1908, Mesopotamia in 1927, a British-led oil company, the Iraq Petroleum Company, IPC, showed interest in the region. The Anglo-Persian Oil Company, APOC, later become British Petroleum or BP, had a 23.75% share in IPC. From 1935, onshore concessions to explore oil were granted to the local by the local rulers, and OP signed the first one on behalf of the Petroleum Commission, PLC, and the associated company, IPC. The APOC was prevented from developing a region alone because of the restrictions from the Red Line Agreement, which required to operate through IPC. A number of options between PLC and the Trucial rulers were signed, providing useful revenues for communities experiencing poverty following the collapse of the pearl trade. However, the wealth of oil which the rulers could see from the revenues accruing to surrounding countries such as Iran, Bahrain and Kuwait, Qatar and Saudi Arabia remained elusive. For the first boreholes in Abu Dhabi, so Abu Dhabi and Dubai are in UAE, were drilled. The Petroleum Development Trucial Coast Company, called PDTC, at Arasi in 1950, with a 13,000-foot deep 4-kilometre borehole drilling a year to drill and turning out dry at a tremendous cost of £1 million. Well, it wasn't looking good for them. They're getting oil everywhere, but they're all rooted. So let's see what's going on. The British set up a development office that's helped some small developments in the Emirates. The seven sheikhs of the Emirates then decided to form a council to coordinate matters between them and took over the development office. In 1952, they formed the Trucial States Council and appointed Adi Bitar, Dubai's Sheikh arrested legal advisor, as the Secretary General of the Legal Advisor Council. The council was terminated once the United Emirates was formed. The tribal nature of the society and the lack of definition of borders between emirates frequently led to disputes, settled either through mediation or more rarely force. The Trucial Oman Scouts was a small military force used by the British to keep the peace. In 1953, a subsidiary of BP, Darcy Exploration Pty Limited, obtained an offshore concession from the ruler of Abu Dhabi. BP joined with Compagnie Française du Pétrole, later Total, to form an operating companies, Abu Dhabi Marine Areas Pty Limited and Abu Dhabi Marines, Dubai Marine Areas, Duma. A number of undersea oil surveys were carried out, including one that led by a famous marine explorer, Jacques Cousteau, in 1958. A floating platform rig was towed from Hamburg, Germany, and positioned over the Umm Shalif pearl bed in Abu Dhabi waters, where drilling began. In March, it struck oil in the Upper Thalma. It's a rock formation that would provide many valuable oil finds. This is the first commercial discovery on the Trucial Coast, leading to the first exports of oil in 1962. My God, they've gone far. ADMA made further offshore discoveries at Zucum and elsewhere, and other companies made commercial finds such as the Fadit oil field off Dubai and the Maruk oil field off Sharjah. Can I say, you fly over this and it's at night and you see these oil fields alight and they're beautiful. Meanwhile, onshore exploration was hindered by territorial disputes. In 1955, the United Kingdom represented Abu Dhabi and Oman in their disputes with Saudi Arabia over the Barumi Oasis. In 1974, agreement between Abu Dhabi and Saudi Arabia seemed to have been settled, an Abu Dhabi-Saudi border dispute, but not ratified. The UAE border with Oman was ratified in 2008. I think some of these borders still don't have border lines on them, just to get it straight. Okay, 23. So this is pretty amazing stuff. So the Trucial States, Abu Dhabi, or Dubai and one of those places, one of the tallest building. PDTC continued its onshore exploration away from the disputed area, drilling five more boreholes that were also dry. However, 27th of October 1960, the company discovered oil in commercial quantities at the Marban No. 3 well on the coast of Tafir. In 1962, PDTC became to Abu Dhabi Petroleum Company. As oil revenues increased, the ruler of Abu Dhabi, Zahid Din Sultan Al Nahid, undertook a massive construction program, building schools, housing, hospitals, and roads. When Dubai's oil exports commenced in 1969, Sheikh Rashid Bin Said Al Maktoum, the ruler of Dubai, was able to invest the revenues from the limited reserves found to spark a diversification and a drive that would create a global city of Dubai. Wow. God. By 1966, it had become clear the British government could no longer afford to administer and protect what is now the United Arab Emirates. The British members of Parliament debated preparedness of the Royal Navy to defend the Sheikhdom. The Secretary of State of Defence, Dennis Healy, reported the British Armed Forces were seriously overstretched in some respects and dangerously under-equipped to defend the Sheikhdoms. On the 24th of January 1968, British Prime Minister Harold Wilson announced the government's decision, reaffirmed in March 71 by Prime Minister Edward Heath, to end the treaty relationship with the seven crucial sheikhdoms, and that being together with Bahrain and Qatar under British protection. Days after the announcement, the ruler of Abu Dhabi, Sheikh Zayed bin fearing vulnerability, tried to persuade the British to honour the protection treaties by offering to pay the full cost of keeping the British armed forces in the Emirates. The British Labour government rejected the offer. After the Labour MP Magorny Roberts informed Sheikh of the news of the British withdrawal, the nine Persian Gulf sheikhdoms attempted to form a union of Arab Emirates. But in mid-1971, they were still unable to agree on terms of the union, even though the British treaty relationship was expired in December that year. Fears of vulnerability arise before independence. The Iranian destroyer group broke formation from an exercise in the Lower Gulf, sailing to the Tanab Islands. The islands were taken by force. Civilians, Arab defenders alike allowed to free. The British warship stood idle during the course of the invasion. A destroyer group approached the island of Abu Sanad as well, but there Sheikh Khalid bin Mohammed Al-Qaeda had already negotiated with the Iran Shah. The island was quickly leased to Iran for $3 million a year. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia claimed to swathes of Abu Dhabi. Wow. Originally intended as part to be a Federation of Arab Emirates, Bahrain came independent in August, Qatar September 1971. When the British treaty expired on the 1st of December 1971, they became fully independent. On the 2nd of December 1971, Dubai Guest House was known as Union House. Six of the Emirates agreed to enter into a union called the United Arab Emirates. Ras Al Khaimah joined later on the 10th of January. So there's seven. In December 1972, the Federal National Council was created. Its 40-member consultative body appointed by the seven rulers. The UAE joined the Arab League in the 6th of December 1971, the United Nations in the 9th of December. It was a founding member of the Gulf Cooperation Council. In May 1981, with Abu Dhabi hosting the GCC summit, the 19-year-old Emirate boy from Abu Dhabi, Abu Muhammad Al Samah, designed the UAE flag in 1971. Well, there you go. The main theme of the four-coloured flag was the unity of Arab nations. Pan-Arab colours, green, white, red and black, were adopted. On the 9th of December 71, Al Bashir served UAE ambassador to Chile and currently serves as the ambassador to the Czech Republic. Amazing. The UAE supported military operations from the US and other coalition nations engaged in the war against the Taliban in Afghanistan in 2001. Saddam Hussein in 2003, as well as operations supporting the global war on terror for the Horn of Africa. Al Dhafra Air Base, located outside Abu Dhabi. The airbase also supported Allied operations during the 1991 Persian Gulf War and the Operation Northern Watch. The country had already signed a military defence agreement with the US and in 1994, one with France in 1905. In January 2008, France and the UAE signed a deal allowing France to set up a permanent military base at the Emirate in Dubai. The UAE joined international military operations in Libya in 2011. On the 2nd of November 2004, UAE's first president, Sheikh Zayed bin Sultan Al Nahyan, died. His eldest son, Sheikh Kafir bin Zayed al Nahyan, succeeded as Emir of Abu Dhabi in accordance with the constitution. UAE Supreme Council of Rulers selected Kafir as president. Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed al Nahyan succeeded Kafir as Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi. In January 2006, Sheikh Maktoum bin Rashid al Khartoum, the Prime Minister of UAE and ruler of Dubai, died, and the Crown Prince Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid al Mukin assumed both roles. My God. The first ever national elections were held in UAE in December 2006. A small number of hand-picked voters chose half the members of the Federal National Council, the advisory body. The UAE has largely escaped the Arab Spring, with other countries having experienced. However, more than 100 Emirati activists were jailed and tortured because they sought reforms. Furthermore, some people have had their nationality revoked. Mindful of the process near Bahrain, in November 2012, UAE allowed mockery of its own government or attempts to organise public protests through social media. You cannot mock the government. Geography. The United Arab Emirates is situated in the Middle East, bordering the Gulf of Oman, Gulf of Persia between Oman and Saudi Arabia, and is a strategic location slightly south of the Strait of Hormuz, a vital transit point for the world's crude oil. The UAE lies 22 degrees 30 minutes and 26 degrees 10 minutes north latitude and between 51 and 56.25 degrees longitude. It shares 350 kilometers border with Saudi Arabia to the west and the southeast, and 450 kilometers border to the Oman to the south, east, and northeast. The land border with Qatar, and the land border with Qatar. Wow, I thought Qatar was in Kawi Al Sud area, about 19 kilometers. So it's just Qatar just nudges it. So I didn't know that one. I thought it was separate. So it's just in there. However, it's a source of ongoing dispute. Following Britain's military departure, the UAE in 1981, the settlement of a new state, UAE laid claim to the islands surrounding islands, resulting in disputes with Iran that remain. I think Iran's part of a dickhead place. Oh my God, look at that. So, UAE's got all these patchworks, and there's one big area. I don't know how Qatar is. It really is just a big peninsula, like the air peninsula, pointing up unresolved. So, Iran's still a bugbear. UAE also disputes claims of other islands against neighbouring Qatar. The largest emirate, Abu Dhabi, accounts for 87% of UAE's total area. Oh, okay, so this is most of UAE. There's this one southern emirate which is huge. The smallest emirate, Ajam, encompasses only 259 square kilometres, which is microscopic. So if it's 10 square by 10 square kilometres, it's 20 by 10, so that's just a couple of suburbs in the mountains. The UAE coast stretches more than 450 kilometres along the southern shore of the Persian Gulf. Most of the coast consists of salt pans extended far inland. The largest natural harbour is Dubai, although other ports have been dredged at Dubai, Adado Dai, Shahara, and elsewhere. Numerous islands were found in the Persian Gulf, and the ownership of some of them have been the subject of international disputes of both Iran and Qatar. The smaller islands, as well as many coral reefs and shifting sandbars, are a menace to navigation. Strong tides and occasional windstorms further complicate ship movements near the shore. The UAE also has a stretch of Al-Bound coast in the Gulf of Oman. Although the Muzham Peninsula, the very tip of Arabia, and the Strait of Hormuz is an enclave of Oman separated by the UAE. Right, that's a bit. So the UAE. Oh! So it doesn't stretch all the way up. It's got a bit of Oman sticks out. So a bit of Oman is actually sticking out the very top point. So UAE doesn't, it's not a simple chop. You know, you simply can't just sort of dash here. It's got a dash of Oman up the top. Well, that's an important point to know. So Oman's got a little enclave up the top. Poor Oman. I wonder how Oman's doing along. Wow. There's some highest mountains, which is 1.892 kilometres. So that's, sorry, it's 1.892 kilometres. That's actually, you know, fairly big mountain. Southwest and west of Abadai, a vast rolling sand dunes merged into the Rub al-Khair empty quarter of Saudi Arabia. The desert area of Abu Dhabi includes two important oases. Oh my god, this is... Yeah, I'm being eaten alive by mosquitoes for you people out there. I'm just suffering for you. Two important oases with adequate underground water for permanent settlements and cultivation. The extensive Liwa oasis in the south, near the identified border with Saudi Arabia, about 100 kilometres north of Liwa, is the Al-Barami Oasis, which extends on both sides of Oman border. So that's a problem. Is it a human man-made lake near the border of Oman? Prior to withdrawing from the area in 1971, Britain delineated internal borders among the Seven Emirates in order to preempt territorial disputes that might hamper formation of the Federation. In general, the rulers of the Emirates accepted the British intervention, but in the case of boundary disputes between Abu Dhabi and Dubai, and also between Dubai and Sharjah, conflicting claims were not resolved until after the UAE became independent. The most complicated border is where Al-Jahar Al-Gibi Mountains, where five of the Emirates contest jurisdiction over more than a dozen enclaves. Whoa! Wow! An enclave is like it's an area surrounded by the other nation. Flora and fauna. Well, hopefully it's better than Qatar, which boasts 23 mighty funguses. The oasis grows date palms, acacia, eucalyptus trees, Galania azzi. The desert and the flora is very sparse and consists of grasses and thorn bushes. The indigenous fauna had come close to extinction because of extensive hunting, which is led by a conservation program of Sir Bani Yas. Islands initiated by Sheikh Zayed bin Sultan Al Nahid in the 1970s, resulting in survival, for example, of the Arabian onyx, Arabian camel, leopards, coastal fish, mammals. Consists mainly of mackerel, perch, tuna, as well as sharks and whales. Climate. The UAE is subtropical arid with hot summers and warm winters, unlike Kuwait and the other ones, which just are mostly out to sea and just turn into a sort of a hot pan. The hottest months, with the average maximum temperatures above 45 degrees on the coastal plains, with the Hajir Mountains, the temperatures are considerably lower, the result of increased elevation. Average minimum temperature in January and February are between 10 and 14 degrees. During the late summer months, a humid southeastern wind known as the Easterner makes the coastal region especially unpleasant. The average annual summer months are humid... the rainfall of the coastal area is less than 120 millimetres, but in the mountain areas, annual rainfall often reaches 350 millimetres. The rain in the coastal regions fall in short torrential bursts during the summer months, sometimes resulting in floods of ordinary dry wadi beds. The region is prone to occasional violent dust storms, which can severely reduce visibility. In December 2004, there was a snow record in UAE for the very first time. In the Jel Jarrah mountain cluster in Rush Al Kamid. A few years later, there was more sightings of snow and hail. The Jebel Jas mountain cluster had experienced snow only twice since recording begins. Very important to note. So, it's a complete cluster. There's a border with Kuwait. Oman's broken up. And I really want to understand the Islam that way. Politics. United Arab Emirates is a federal constitutional monarchy made of a federation of seven hereditary tribal absolute monarchy-style political systems called sheikhdoms. It is governed by a federal supreme council made the ruling sheikhs of Dubai and all these Dubai and these. All responsibilities not granted to the national governments are reserved to individual emirates. A percentage of revenues from each emirate is allocated to UAE's central budget. The United Arab Emirates uses the title Sheikh instead of Emir to refer to the rulers of individual emirates. Okay. The title was used due to the Sheikhdom-style government system in adherence to the culture of the tribes of Arabia, where Sheikhs means leader, elder, and tribal chief to a clan who partakes in shared decision-making of his followers. Oh, there you go. Isn't that a Sheikh said a little bit better than an Emir? The President and Prime Minister are elected by the Federal Supreme Council. Usually a Sheikh from Abu Dhabi holds presidency and a Sheikh from Dubai holds prime ministership. All Prime Ministers but one have served concurrently as Vice President. Sheikh Zayed bin Al Nahyan is a UAE founding father and is widely accredited for unifying the seven emirates into one country. He was UAE's first president and from the nation's founding until his death in 2004. On the following day, the Federal Supreme Council elected his son to the post. The federal government is composed of three branches, legislative, executive, judicial. The UAE government is the extension of the UAE federal government, LE government, in its electoral forms. The UAE Council of Ministers, the chief executive branch of government, presided by the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister, who is appointed by Federal Supreme Council, appoints the ministers. The Council of Ministers are made up of 22 members and manages all internal and foreign affairs under its... God, this is getting hard. Constitutional and federal laws. UAE is the only country in the world that has a Ministry of Tolerance, a Ministry of Happiness, a Ministry of Artificial Intelligence. It also has a virtual ministry of possibilities designed to find solutions and challenges to improve the quality of life. The UAE has a National Youth Council, which is represented by UAE Cabinet, Minister of Youth. Wow, that is just... It's just, wow, a Ministry of Happiness and a Ministry of Artificial Intelligence. Go Wikipedia. Kuwait sounded an interesting country, but UAE is also interesting. The UAE Legislative is a federal national council, which continues nationwide elections every year, 4 years. The FNC consists of 40 members drawn from all emirates. Each emirate is allocated specific seats to ensure full representation. Half are appointed by the rulers of the constituent emirates, and the other half are elected. By law, the council members has to be equally divided between males and females. The FNC is restricted to a largely consultative role. The UAE is described by Western observers as an autocracy. According to the New York Times, the UAE is an autocracy with a sheen of progressive modern state. UAE ranks poorly in freedom indices, including measuring civil liberties and political rights. UAE annual ranked as not free in Freedom's House Annual Freedom of the World Report, which measures civil liberties and political rights. The UAE also ranks poorly in the annual reports, Reporters Without Borders Press Freedom Index. Sheikh Zayed was asked by the New York Times in 1997 on why there was no elected democracy in the United Emirates, to which he replied, quote, "Why should we abandon a system that satisfies our people in order to introduce a system which seems to engender dissent and confrontation? Our system of government is based upon our religion and what our people want. Should we seek observers, we are ready to listen to them. We have always said that our people should voice their demands openly. We are all in the same boat, and they are both the captain and the crew. Our doors are open for any opinion to be expressed, as well as by our own citizens. It is our deep conviction that God has created people free, and as described, each individual must enjoy the freedom of choice. No one should act for others." Sort of, so a lot of the French Revolution, Henri Comte and Rousseau have missed the boat here. Okay, so I'm going to read a little bit into foreign relations and stop. Foreign relations. The UAE has extensive diplomatic and commercial relations with other countries. It plays a significant role in OPEC and in the UN as one of the founding members of the Gulf Cooperation Council. One of the main anchors of the UAE's foreign policy has been building cooperation based on relations with all countries in the world. Substantial development assistance has increased UAE's stature among its recipient states. Most of the foreign aid, in excess of $15 billion, has been to Arab and Muslim countries. UAE is a member of the United Nations and several specialised agencies, WHO and WIPO. What does WIPO mean? As well as the World Bank, IMF, Arab League, Organisations of Islamic Cooperation, Organisation of Arab Petroleum Exporting Countries, which is, I suppose, OPEC. And Organisation International La Francophone. So they joined, Qatar joined, but it's really upset them. UAE maintains close relationship with Egypt and Egypt's largest investor, and is Egypt's largest investor from the Arab world. Pakistan was the first country to formally recognise UAE and the formation and continues to be one of the major economics and trading partners. China and UAE is also strong international allies, with significant cooperation going across economic and political lines. The largest exhibited presence in UAE is Indian. Okay, following the British withdrawal of UAE in 1971, the settlement of the UAE state, the UAE disputed rights of three islands of the Persian Gulf against Iran, namely Abu Mahsa, Greater Tanab, and Lesser Tanab. UAE tried to bring the matter to the International Court of Justice, but Iran dismissed the notion. The dispute has not significantly impacted the relations because the large Iranian community presence and a strong economic ties. UAE is also has a long and close relationship with the UK and Germany and many other nationals reside at UAE. The former British Prime Minister Tony Blair serves as a fund advisor to Mubadala Development Company, a wholly owned investment vehicle of the government of Abu Dhabi. In November 2018, the United Kingdom threatened the UAE with serious diplomatic consequences if it sentenced British academic Matthew Hedges to life in prison for allegedly spying for the UK government. Okay, we're going to finish there for the moment. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.